Okay, quick. Where do you store last winter's clothing? How about the tax records from 2010? There's a fair amount of stuff we have to keep hanging around the house, even if we don't always know exactly where it is. Government is like that, too, multiplied by a jillion or so. The state of Oregon, like any state, maintains archives of past records, a lot of documents and that sort of thing. Old, musty stuff, you might think, but there are some real gems in there. And the public gets a look at the gems as part of the State Archives' current display, I Found It in the Archives. Two guests join us by phone. Jean Atkins is the current Oregon Secretary of State. Jean, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And Mary Beth Heckert is with us as well. She's the Director of the State Archives. Hi, Mary Beth.
Good morning.
So let's start with the broad stuff, Jean. What is contained in the State Archives?
Well, the under the Oregon Constitution, the Secretary of State is charged with responsibility for keeping all of the legislative and executive branch records that may be needed to recreate our history and to keep a whole record of what Oregon as a state has done. And we have an archives building in Salem, but we also have a record center. The Secretary of State's office also is the rulemaker for how long state records should be retained.
What happens when they are no longer retained? Where do they go?
Well, if they can legally be so, they're not something that we need to keep, then they can be destroyed.
Wow. And what's the minimum amount of time anything we'll spend in the state archives?
Mary Beth, can you help us with that one?
Sure. The minimum time anything spends at the state archives is forever. we only take the permanent records of Oregon's government. And then at the State Record Center, we take the less than permanent. It's just a more inexpensive and efficient way for agencies to store records until they're ready for destruction. But we have retentions as short as one day and retentions as long as forever. But at the Archives Building, everything's here forever.
How much room does all that take up at the State Archives?
Right now, we have close to 50,000 boxes. Well, the equivalent of 50,000 boxes. We have volumes and photographs and audio tape and movies and all sorts of maps and drawings and all sorts of things. So our building can accommodate up about 100,000 cubic feet, which is the equivalent of one box. And right now we've started our transition into compact shelving, so we can originally the building held 42,000. And now we can transition up to that 100,000.
Is the compact shelving the stuff where you can pull the shelves out and just kind of find the space between just the ones you need to get into?
Yes. It's the collapsible shelving, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how much of the state archives have been digitized over the years? Are you able to save some space that way?
Part of the problem with electronic records is that, as you may know, is if you've ever gone back to try to open up an old WordPerfect document or something is that technology.
The brother word processor, yeah.
Yeah, technology changes quite a bit. So we've been very careful in what we've digitized to make sure that we can access it not only today but well into the future. So recently, in 2009, we began what's called the Oregon Records Management Solution, and that allows us it's a public-private partnership where we manage electronic records for the entire length of their retention period, including permanent records. And so we have begun transitioning and putting some of our records in. And probably the best example of that is the legislative audio tapes, which have come in a variety of formats over the years, everything from two different sizes of reel-to-reels and cassettes, to what was called a Sawyer roll, which looks like an old dictaphone tape, if anybody remembers those. And we've been working on digitizing that and getting that available, and so it's now available online and in electronic format.
And Mary Beth, is the archives responsible as well for storing records that began life electronically? It seems like there was much said as we transitioned between governors about email records, for example.
Yes, we do. And again, that's why we developed this electronic storage system and management system so that we can actually take them electronically, keep them electronically, and provide access to them that way as well.
We're just learning about the Oregon State Archives here on the Jefferson Exchange on our way to learning about a special program called I Found It in the Archives. Mary Beth Heckert is the director of the State Archives, and Gene Atkins is the Secretary of State of Oregon. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, I noticed, Gene Atkins, the I Found It in the Archives name elsewhere a few years ago as well. So this sounds like it's something that archivists have been doing across the country.
I think they get excited whenever they find things, and it is a good way to present that to the public.
And so, what's the what are you pulling out here, and how are you presenting it to the public?
Well, this weekend in the Archives building, there's going to be an open house. There is a display there, which is an ongoing display for several weeks that you can come and visit, that shows some of the more interesting stories and documents that that go with those stories that have been found by either volunteers or staff who work with the Archives to do this kind of history. And this weekend there will be an open house and a little bit of a lighthearted look at how the mysteries of finding things in our history takes place, and people can go on a little adventure exploring one themselves.
You know, Mary Beth Heckert, I know people like the idea of things being found, but I think as an archivist, I want to give you a chance to say whether things are ever actually lost in the first place.
If we've lost anything?
Yeah.
Well, we have, because we've had two capital fires in Oregon. And before the archives came into existence in the late 40s, the records were all being stored at the state capitol. So when the capitol burned in 35, we lost a lot of records. In fact, it's kind of interesting because some of the records we have in our holding, you can see the burn singe marks around the edges of the records. And then we also, the very first capital that was in existence burned as well, and so records are there. The biggest fear that we have now is with electronic records, is because people don't understand how electronic records are maintained. I mean, it's great to do business with because it's quick and efficient, but you really have to understand that those formats change. And then you lose the information because you no longer have the hardware or software to read them. And that's what is really, from an archive standpoint or an archivist standpoint, is very difficult to accept that you're going to lose that. The other thing that I think has changed over the years is it was always kind of cool to look at a handwritten letter by, you know, Douglas MacArthur or C. Abraham Lincoln's signature. But so much of our business today is done electronically that we've lost that kind of intrinsic value that a record has, that kind of neat thing. So our future generations aren't ever going to see some of the things that we've been able to see as archivists.
Oh, things written by somebody's own hand, for example. Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah, it's a lot more impersonal this way. Do you end up having to make hard copies of some things just to make sure that there is a record that will survive a transition from one electronic system to another?
Yes, we do. Or we have to microfilm it,
mm-hmm.
Just so that we have something that's iReadable down for the future.
Gene Atkins, I want to get a sense from you as you moved into the Secretary of State's office this year about how much your knowledge of what is kept in the state archives and what can be found in there blossomed.
Well, absolutely, it did, and it's been very exciting to learn about and to understand what a great responsibility it is to keep that history fresh and alive for young Oregonians in particular. One different project than the one that we're talking about today is one to preserve the Oregon State Constitution, the original Constitution, which is as most paper products do, deteriorate and in need of restoration. The archives would like very much to be able to display that publicly and make that available to school children so that they can understand and see live what happened when Oregon was formed. Going to be working, have started a project last year of asking school children to help us raise money to preserve that and create an environment, a box, if you will, that's protected that will allow it to be displayed at certain points. Some people don't know that school children gilded the pioneer at the top of the Capitol, and they are often the most interested in the history of the place that they grew up. So we're having a nice participatory project in trying to preserve the state constitution.
Well, I never realized that. So I assume the statue of the pioneer was closer to the ground at the time the gold leaf was applied.
I don't think the children actually applied it, but but you're right. Whoever did had to have done so perhaps before it went up.
We're talking about the Oregon State Archives with Secretary of State Gene Atkins and Archive Director Mary Beth Heckard. There's a special display out there now called I Found It in the Archives. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760. By phone, by email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Robert in Eureka, California. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, good morning, Jeffrey. I have a question for Mary Beth. My wife has a book that was handed down to her through generations of her family. It's called The Chronicle of the Oregon Indian Wars, and it was commissioned by the Oregon legislature, I think it was 1850, and she has ancestors that were on both sides of those battles, and I'm wondering, you know, apart from the obvious historical value family, you know, sentimentality, what, you know, for insurance purposes, something like that might be worth.
All right. Well, don't know if Mary Beth's on that one, but we'll find out. Thanks for that, Robert. Appreciate it.
Things like that, it's very hard to put a monetary value on a historical record because you're dealing with one-of-a-kind, in a lot of cases, items. And there should be, I mean, if first of all, anything with that deals with Native Americans, especially from that time period, is very rare. Because it would have been a commission that would have gone out and actually would have had to have some sort of relationship with the tribes to get anything written at that time. So my suggestion would be is to go to a rare book dealer and they could appraise that for them and give them some sort of monetary value. I mean, of course, it's priceless for the family history in it of itself, but there are people that is their profession, is to try to appraise some of these historic records. But I know for our purposes, that's one of the big difficulties is when it comes to risk management, how much money are all the records worth that we have in this building? And they really are priceless because they can't be replaced.
Has there been any beefing up of security over the years to make sure that you put things in more secure places or at the very least in more temperature-regulated places and acid-free containers, that sort of thing?
Yes. In the State Archives, when I came to work at the State Archives, we were over in an old hops warehouse in Salem, and the State Archivist at the time, that was his goal, was to get us a new building. So when we moved into this building in late 1990-91, it is a state-of-the-art building. It's built to current earthquake codes. It's all temperature and humidity controlled in the stack areas. All the records we receive go into acid-free containers. We have two vaults, one for microfilm and one for photos and audio tape, and they have different environments and temperature and humidity requirements as well. So, yes, this building, we are very fortunate in Oregon to have a state-of-the-art facility that really takes into consideration preserving the record. And our stacks are closed. Only my staff is allowed to go back there to pull records for patrons who come to the archives to use them. And when somebody comes to the archives, we do require a government-issued photo ID, and then they can go into the reading room with only paper and pencil or computers. We do allow them to take computers or things like that in there, but they can have no cases or anything, and they're only allowed to use pencil because you can't, if there was a mark to be made with a pen, you can't erase it.
So who are the people who would generally come to seek things out of the State Archives?
Well, our two largest user groups are genealogists who come and use the birth and death records that we have or some of the probate records and assessment records like that to find about their family and their history. We've actually had Kelsey Grammer and Tony Goldwyn here as part of the series, Who Do You Think You Are? tracing their family history, of which we had records in our holdings. And the other group, the largest group that we get are attorneys, because the laws in Oregon are based on legislative intent. So they come in to do legislative research to understand what was the intent of the legislature when they passed a particular bill or law into place. We have seen an increase in academics coming in to do research as well. So as more of our information becomes available, we see different user groups coming in to use our records.
We're talking about the Oregon State Archives and a display this weekend called I Found It in the Archives. You can also find a lot of the material online. We'll explain how in just a moment. Mary Beth Heckert is the director of the State Archives, and Gene Atkins is the Oregon Secretary of State. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Secretary Atkins, when you start a project like this, where do you go first? I mean, what do you decide is the interesting stuff?
Well, I certainly rely on the professionals there at the archives who have followed both their passions and the interests of the public to track down the documents that are most relevant to them. But there's national organizations. We, you know, obviously are part of. Mary Beth is part of professional organizations. This is National Archives Month, so folks work together to figure out ways to best present to the public what's going on in archives world, and to do some fun things to entertain people.
You know, I fixated on, in particular, the correspondence with the Oregon Attorney General about women voting for the first time in 1912. Mary Beth, what's going on in that string of correspondence?
It was really interesting, as many know, and it's kind of a neat connection to the archives as well, as many who know that women's suffrage in Oregon was spearheaded for many years by Abigail Scott Duniway. Her grandson, David Duniway, was the first state archivist in Oregon. But when the resolution the vote was finally passed and the resolution was signed by the governor to enact and allow women to vote, there were some county clerks and local government officials who didn't agree with that, and so they were going to, until they got a mandate from the state to allow these women to vote, they were not going to let them participate in the election. So we have those letters as part of that correspondence with the Attorney General, as well as some others saying, heck, we're going to let them vote. We have an election tomorrow, and we're going to let them vote. So this, we don't care what the state says or sets the parameters up. So you had both sides of the coin in that discussion, and it is really entertaining. Is how hard it is for folks to change and allow different things to occur, even though the law says it's okay.
Yeah, it was a little weird reading that, thinking about half the voting rights of our adults, or the voting rights of half of our adults being granted, but questioned still.
Mm-hmm.
In these documents, and there are some handwritten letters in there as well. And you can read all these again online. Let me see if I can give a clear link here. If you go to the Secretary of State's office in Oregon, actually, there's an easier link just to jeffexchange.org that takes you straight to the I Found It in the Archives page. Delayed birth records. Mary Beth, what's that about?
Oregon didn't require birth certificates until 1903. A statewide birth certificate until 1903. So people before that time who needed to prove their age needed a way of getting a birth certificate, maybe for Social Security or for a passport or some other endeavor that they wanted to take. And so they had to have a way to prove their birth. And so the state came up with a list of documents that could be presented to the state, and then they would issue what was called a delayed birth certificate. So it was a certificate that was issued after the person was born that would reflect a birth date for them, an actual birth date. So they'd have some proof of age from the government.
Is there any stuff that's peculiar to Southern Oregon in the archives that strikes you as outstanding?
Oh, well, we have actually there's three panels that are part of this exhibit from Southern Oregon. Two are closely related. The third, not so much. The one is the Deautremont brothers who tried to blow up a rail car. And it was and that happened in Jackson County, And then we have two from Curry County. One was dealing with the flu epidemic, is a state legislator actually from Curry County, and his wife succumbed to the influenza outbreak in the early 1900s. And that was pretty interesting records that we found, in that, in addition, the legislature then appropriated $200 to go to his children, and the representative who took his place was supposed to mete out that money to the children. And his name was George Chenoweth. And the second panel is of him, who he actually murdered an acquaintance of his daughter, the father of his daughter's child, because he wouldn't marry his daughter. And he had been a war hero and was suffering from some injuries from the war, and so he was later exonerated from his crimes because of those war injuries. But so we have a number of records, not just the ones that are highlighted in our exhibit, but a number of records from Southern Oregon in our holdings that relate to different, you know, probate cases and assessment and tax records and things like that.
It can be fascinating stuff. Secretary Atkins, was there anything that surprised you more than anything else in the cullings from the archives here?
Well, I think it's the fact that once you start to look at one document, it leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. I mean, it's putting together those puzzle pieces that I think the archivists and the volunteers that work with them find fascinating, that there are connections. You know, we play the 7 degrees from Seven Bacon game. Well, we're all maybe 7 or 10 degrees from Mr. Chenoweth, if our family, you know, was in Oregon at that point. And the kinds of links that you can make between one thing and another once you start with birth records or records of folks who have spent time in the Oregon State Penitentiary, or, you know, any number of things that might be in public record, and then you follow those chains. I think it's a fascinating thing.
Mary Beth Heckert, quickly, what time is the open house tomorrow?
It's 10 to 3.
10 to 3 at the Oregon State Archives in Salem. Mary Beth Heckert is the director of the State Archives. Jean Atkins, the Secretary of State, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you
for having us.